The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
Are you someone who appears to have a perfect life on the outside, but inward you struggle with depression? Have you become an expert at hiding your emotional pain from others?
Our guest on this episode, clinical psychologist Dr. Margaret Rutherford, is an expert on what she calls perfectly hidden depression. In fact, she's written a book called Perfectly Hidden Depression, How to Break Free from the Perfectionism That Masks Your Depression. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm absolutely delighted. Hello from Arkansas.
Oh. Well, hello from San Francisco. Tell us more about how you define perfectly hidden depression.
Sure, that's a great question. It's different. Classic depression has a lot of symptoms that are named in the DSM-5, and it's about anhedonia, depressed mood, helplessness, hopelessness, problems in thinking, sleep disturbance, all that kind of thing is classic depression. When I wrote my first blog post, which is I happened to use the term perfectly hidden depression, it was quite a random thing, actually. I was trying to describe this subset of people who come into therapy, and the last thing they would tell you is that they're depressed. In fact, they sort of look at you very puzzled when you say, I wonder if you could be depressed, because they look more anxious, they look fatigued, they look overworked, if indeed they ever do come into therapy. And so I started being very intrigued by the difference in how you work with these people, because they don't recognize their depression, how exactly do you try to get to the bottom of it? And what I discovered was a real clue, was that if I could point out to them in therapy, you just talked about something that most people would think is very painful. You described a rape the week before you started college. You described your mother throwing rocks at you when you were a child and telling you you'd never amount to anything. And you're sort of smiling at me and nodding your head like you're about to tell me what you had for lunch. Mm-hmm. And so when I began pointing that out to them, they got kind of quiet and said, well, I've never allowed myself to actually even explore what that was like. That's weakness. Tears are weakness. Looking back on that or having some kind of compassion for that, I need to live in the present. I need to count my blessings. I've got so many blessings in my life. I'm successful. I have lots of friends. I have a family that loves me. So they did not allow themselves to go inward. And that's the huge difference in working with someone who has classic depression, as I stated the symptoms before. You're trying to get them to be engaged externally. You're trying to get them recommitted or refocused on their life outside of their internal world. With perfectly hidden depression, you're doing the opposite. You're inviting someone and trying to help them understand that there is value in going inward.
So how is the treatment different for depression versus perfectly hidden depression?
It's very different. Now, it doesn't mean that someone with classic depression doesn't need to sort out some of their maybe irrational thinking that's mm-hmm. obviously inward. It doesn't mean that they don't put on a smiling face, and many of them do, and go to work or take care of their kids, and that they know they have this depression that is just right beneath the surface, or even once their responsibilities are over, it hits them full. But the people with classic depression will admit to you, I am depressed. Someone with perfectly hidden depression, they developed a strategy, and it's, from my perspective, it's a childhood strategy that helped them survive they had to look perfect to somehow survive. They had to be a pseudo-adult. They had to be super focused on accomplishment. They had to please, whatever it was that started them off that path. And the work there is with, for one thing, you have to, you know, when someone's perfectionistic, they think that's a strength. You have to say, you know, could it be possible that your perfectionism is actually getting to be a problem, that it is something that you have created in order to hide or cloak or keep secret some of these things that you have pushed away that are in your past that you never want to talk about. And the work involves not only helping them see that this has become a problem, but helping them connect with emotions they have long, long suppressed for good reason, but that they also can deny for a long time that they even need to do that. But what brings people to therapy, or at least what brought a lot of people to reach out to me once I started writing about it, I would receive these emails saying, I'm writing because I want no one else to live their life this way. I am lonely. I am empty. I'm despairing. No one knows the real me. And I've even had thoughts of driving off the road. I have these suicidal thoughts that I tell no one. And these are the people that I believe, Jan and Laura, are falling through the therapeutic cracks because they do look so great and their lives are so successful looking that they would never be diagnosed or rarely be diagnosed with depression.
This episode is sponsored by Ritual. We want to tell you more about why we're big believers in all of Ritual's products, and we want to share a special offer for our listeners from Ritual.
You may have heard us talk about Ritual's essential protein products or Ritual's essential for women 18 plus multivitamin. And now we want to tell you about another great product from Ritual called Symbiotic Plus.
It's my daily 3-in-1 clinically studied prebiotic, probiotic, and postbiotic designed to help support a balanced gut microbiome. If your gut's telling you it needs a little support, Ritual has your back.
With Ritual's Symbiotic Plus, I get two of the world's most clinically studied probiotic strains to support the relief of mild and occasional digestive discomforts like bloating, gas, and diarrhea.
So why include a postbiotic? Well, it provides fuel to the cells that make up the gut lining, and it supports a healthy gut barrier.
Symbiotic Plus is a delayed release capsule that's designed to help survive the harsh conditions of the upper GI tract for delivery to the colon, an ideal place for probiotics to grow and thrive.
Symbiotic Plus comes in an all-in-one, single-nested, minty capsule. There's no refrigeration needed, so it's easy to take with you when you travel.
Symbiotic Plus and Ritual are here to celebrate, not hide your insides. It's time to listen to your gut. Ritual is offering our Nobody Told Me listeners 10% off during your first 3 months.
Visit ritual.com/NTM to start Ritual or add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today.
All you have to do is visit ritual.com/NTM to start Ritual or add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and this product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Visit ritual.com/NTM to start Ritual or add Symbiotic Plus to your subscription today.
Is perfectly hidden depression more common in women than men or in younger people or older? What are the guidelines there?
That's a great question, and actually I don't believe there have been very many research studies about age range of perfectionism. However, there are some really good studies coming out. In fact, I was just looking at one before our conversation that says that there's definitely trending. Perfectionism and depression, classic depression, are also trending in the millennial generation and the one following it, because there is just this sense of awareness that, you know, that if you're not the very best at your game, your whether that's your sports, whether that's your academics, that you people just give up. Millennials give up, and they don't want to be seen as imperfect, and in fact they really struggle with the idea that they even should look to others like they don't have their lives going on. In fact, I have a new patient who has this huge Instagram following, and of course, I checked it out. There's nothing in her Instagram feed that would reflect how depressed she is, but it's all over the place with her. She even is suicidal, but one would never know that from looking at Instagram. So there are certainly, I tell you, someone who writes about this a lot is a sociologist named Jean Twenge, T-W-E-N-G-E. And her latest book is something about, I can't remember the total title, it's iGen. She's kind of named that generation iGen. Mm-hmm. And she talks about how the preoccupation with a cell phone and the isolativeness that is engendered. She says somewhat ironically and very sadly, this generation is not killing each other as much as they are killing themselves. Hmm. So there's been a huge shift between the rates of suicide, and in fact, in millennials and teenagers, this rate is going sky high, and at much greater levels than has ever been seen in the past. And she's quite disturbed about it.
What can indicate a risk of suicide? How can we identify that in people who have perfectly hidden depression, since the signs aren't really outward?
It's really tough. Mm. It's really tough. Mm. I'll tell you, a mom reached out to me, and she writes quite eloquently about her son. And he was a high school senior. He was 18. And he looked great. I mean, the counselor had seen him in the halls. He always had a lot of friends. He'd been accepted to a great college, and he told a friend of his that he'd met a camp or something. She was a young woman who lived in another town, that he had suicidal thoughts. Well, that young woman emailed the counselor and said, "You've got to talk to this young man." He did. He called him in, said, "I've gotten this email. I don't really know how to understand it." And the young man said, "I'm fine. You know, I was just having a bad night." Again, the whole issue is perfectionists, and especially younger perfectionists who don't have the objectivity about themselves, hopefully, that older people do, it is so hard to see it as a problem. Mm-hmm. Well, this young man, after he met with the counselor, and the counselor did not call the parents, which was a huge problem, hung himself 3 weeks later.
Oh, my God.
And this kind of thing is happening a lot. I have seen parents whose children have done this. And they look at me and they say, but he had or she had everything going for her. There's a wonderful book called What Made Maddie Run, who was about a runner named, by Kate Fagan, a runner named Maddie Holleran, out of UPenn. And she was a college track star. She had everything going for her, and all her selfies looked great, but she planned her own suicide, and she had gifts there for her. She had to do the perfect. She had to look completely organized and perfectionistic, even in the way she planned her suicide. She had gifts there for people. She had notes there for people in the very parking garage where she actually ran off of it and died by suicide. This is happening more and more and more. In fact, I would challenge your listening audience to think, I know that I know somebody, we all know somebody at this point, who looked great and died by suicide. So even our just general awareness of the problem has grown exponentially. And yet, what do we do about it? Because like Kate Spade, she was afraid to reveal her bipolar illness because of what it would do to her brand. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, or deal with it more openly. That's the problem with perfectionism, because no one is walking up to someone who looks this successful saying, "Are you sure everything's okay?
Right.
You don't
right.
look like yourself." Mm-hmm. And so they don't get that kind of support from other people that say, I just think something's off with you. maybe let someone in. So it is a real tricky problem. In fact, sometimes when a teenager or a young person does die by suicide, what you'll see on television or in the media is they trot out these things, how you can know your teenager might be considering suicide. And they list all the signs of classic depression, which can be different in with a teenager. I want to throw a pillow at the television, because what they are not saying is what you can do about that as a parent, as a friend, as a spouse. Are you talking about what bothers you, where your vulnerabilities are? Have you shared with your parents, with your kids, sorry, are you parents that have shared with your kids your own vulnerabilities, your own sorrows, your sadness, your anger, your fear? Of course, to an appropriate extent. But if you do that with your kids, they are much more likely to come to you and say, Mom or Dad, I'm really struggling. Mm-hmm. Or they're much more likely to admit to friends or whomever can help them. They're much more likely to go to therapy. Now, it's interesting, the millennial generation is going to therapy more often. They seem to be accepting that they can ask for help more. But these perfectionists, these people who are hiding depression, really struggle with that.
What kind of an impact do you think social media has had in fueling this perfectly hidden depression?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I'm not much into comparing myself to other people. I've been in private practice for a while. I've always been, knock on wood, someone who seems to have a pretty full practice most of the time. But it wasn't until I began blogging back in 2012 that all of a sudden, here this world of social media opened up to me. And I thought, oh my gosh, and I started comparing myself. Now, my blog should be doing as well as this blog or this blog.
Sure.
And it was, and I'm a mature woman. I mean, hopefully. hopefully fairly mature. And so it was this awareness of my place in the spectrum. And much greater, in a much greater extent than I think we've ever had to face. Last year I did a seminar with some teenage girls from the age of 8th grade to 12th grade. And, of course, I thought I knew what their problems were going to be, and so I thought so self-comparison was going to be a problem with social media. But what actually came out the most was that the fear of missing out, FOMO, uh-huh. is what was their real bugaboo, that they're so much more aware of what's going on and they're not involved. Mm-hmm. So it's this sense of I'm being excluded. I must not be perfect enough. I must not be funny enough. I must not be smart enough. My Instagram feed isn't cute enough. Something is going on that I could control that will get me into this crowd. And so I do think that adults, whatever generation you're in, we are really struggling as a culture to understand that social media it has a lot of viable and wonderful assets to it, but a primary danger of it is this self-comparison and this sense of I'm being left out and I don't know why, and I must strive to be even better than I'm being.
And we're just so hard on ourselves as a society, and I'm wondering what your best suggestions are for just building more self-compassion.
Yes. I mean, I am, in fact, my last podcast episode was on developing self-compassion. Self-compassion is not, I think when people hear that, they go, what, am I supposed to feel sorry for myself? That's not what self-compassion is at all. Mm-hmm. It is about acknowledging the things that you went through, be it trauma, be it neglect, be it being bullied, be it abuse, be it being just feeling invisible, whether it's being a male and you couldn't talk about your feelings, whether it has to do with being in a family or growing up in a family where they could not talk about their feelings or you weren't allowed to talk about sadness or fear, which many of us are still reared in those families. To go back and acknowledge what that was like, what was you actually go back and say to that child that you were in order to soothe them, in order to help them? That's what self-compassion is. It's about acknowledging, not blaming, acknowledging the things that affected you and influenced you in perhaps a painful way, and then beginning to say, how might that be influencing me in my present? Because what happens is we bring those childhood strategies to survive those things into our adult world. I'll give you an example from my own life. I was highly protected as a child, in fact, fairly smothered by a mom who was a huge worrier, in fact, obsessively so. And so my strategy for handling that was just to go do things and not tell my mother. You know, sort of that old ask for forgiveness before you ask for permission.
Yeah.
Well, and that was my strategy. And I did that. I was fairly rebellious. I was that kind of kid. I was not an easy child. So, but brought into adulthood, what that looked like was that I was going to be damned if I said no to anything. I was overzealous. I didn't really use a lot of objectivity to say, would this be a good thing for me to do? It's just, okay, it's an opportunity. I'm going to go for it. Well, that led to a lot of chaos in my 20s. So we all have to understand that our childhoods and our strategies that may have worked very well back then may be causing some damage. And if your strategy was to seem perfect, to have a lot of accomplishments, to take pride in yourself only because of those accomplishments, to be a friend to others, but to really not let anyone into what was going on with you. If those were your strategies, maybe they worked as a child, but they're going to cause chaos in your adult life. And my writing has been about trying in my own way to ask people to pay attention to this, to actually define it as a problem. You know, Brené Brown's work is incredible and has been such a powerful force in helping people understand the power of vulnerability.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. She's just fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I think probably because she's a researcher and not a clinician, she stopped short, at least in the readings that I've done of hers, and if anybody knows of something that she wrote about this, I'd love to hear about it. From what I could read, she stopped short of actually beginning to say, I wonder if this could be depression. So I have tried to take her work. Well, I didn't even know about her work when I first started writing about this. Believe it or not, I must have been living under a rock. But in fact, I didn't read her work while I was first writing about it because I was a little scared that I was going to, you know, copy what she did because she's so good and I was just starting out. But the more I've read her work, the more I understand that she's sort of setting the stage for this next step into, yes, this can become real depression. This can become suicidal ideation. This can become something so much bigger than you are. You know, there are a lot of studies that have looked at perfectionism, and there are actually three different types. There's self-oriented perfectionism or self-driven perfectionism, which is about expecting perfection from yourself. There's other-oriented perfectionism, which is about expecting perfectionism from others. But the most dangerous kind is what's called socially prescribed perfectionism. And what that means is that you are feeling incredibly pressured and you perceive others' expectations of you to always be better than you were yesterday. If you do a great project for your company, then that becomes what you have to outdo. If you throw a great volunteer organization or nonprofit party and you make a lot of money, then people will look at you and go, you know, we're going to make even more next year with you at their helm. If you're a mom or you're a millennial coming into your first job and you do well in your first job, they look at you and go, you've got great things in front of you. In fact, if you do even better, you know, you'll get that promotion. It's this constant pressure to be better than you were. And people buy into it because if they have what I term as the syndrome of perfectly hidden depression, their worth resides in their accomplishments. So they don't know. They haven't claimed their innate worth yet. And so it's very enticing and very seductive to keep that pressure on. Now, I have a little bit of this myself. When I was in my 20s, I can remember a therapist asking me, what would it be like if you took the thumb out of your own back? And I looked at the therapist and said, I would turn into a slug. I mean, I believed that if I didn't push all the time, mm-hmm. that I would sort of turn into this nothingness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that that's what a lot of these millennials and other people in other generations, older generations, are dealing with, that constant pressure has served to, they use it as fuel. The problem with it is that it is, there's no room for spontaneity, there's no room for play, there's no room for compassion, there's no room for true intimacy, and you get lonelier and lonelier and more despairing.
What are some of the other mental health issues that might go along with perfectly hidden depression?
Yeah. You know, I felt a real duty in writing the book to make sure that I covered exactly this topic, because one of my concerns was that people would read about perfectly hidden depression and they would say, oh, that's what's wrong with me. I have perfectly hidden depression. And again, it's not a diagnosis, it's a syndrome. And they would stop there. And as a clinician and as a psychologist, I thought it was unethical for me to allow that to happen. So there is a section in the book about things that are co-occurring, that are frequently There are things that are co-occurring with the syndrome of perfectly hidden depression that are very common. For example, eating disorders. Eating disorders are all about control. They are not about food. And so it's about self-esteem and control. And in fact, a lot of my patients who've come in with what I've later learned was perfectly hidden depression, or as it was also present, was anorexia or binge purge. Also, OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, is about controlling. It's about having rituals, behaviors, counting, whatever it is, hoarding, that helps you control your anxiety. That is a separate, it's a wholly different kind of issue from the syndrome of perfectly hidden depression. Generalized anxiety disorder is also, can be co-occurring, and generalized anxiety disorder is more about someone who is very hypervigilant, someone who believes that their worry keeps their children safe, or whatever it is. There are distinctions between these two things, but they are subtle. Another one is bipolar 2 disorder. Bipolar 2 disorder are often people who are highly energetic, often very successful, but also very agitated, anxious people. And there are distinctions between bipolar 2 and, again, the syndrome of PhD or perfectly hidden depression. And the last one is actually borderline personality disorder. I think it's very important here to make this distinction, because a lot of people have written me who I end up emailing back and forth that think they have primarily, or they identify with perfectly hidden depression. And as I talk with them, what becomes more apparent to me is what they see in that is that they also have this sense of having two selves. They have the self that the world sees, which often is very productive and quite successful, and then they have the self where they go home and they kind of fall apart. Without the structure of work, they fall apart. And so when I start talking about, people with perfectly hidden depression or who identify with it put out this persona of looking all put together, they go, yeah, that's me. But people with borderline personality disorder have a much more complex, emotionally driven self-destructive kind of issues they're dealing with, and that really needs it's. That's not the same as perfectly hidden depression, and they might see themselves in that, but they really need to seek treatment for borderline personality disorder. So if you don't know the difference, I certainly, you know, I have, like I say, a whole section of my book on it because I think those things are important. Those are psychiatric diagnoses that can be helped with specific treatment techniques and need that help. If you've also got perfectly hidden depression going on, fine, but there, you know, those people need some help, and they need to make sure they're getting therapeutic treatment and even to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist about that.
And Dr. Rutherford, as you know, our show is called Nobody Told Me. So at the end of each program, we ask our guests, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson? So what is it that nobody told you about perfectly hidden depression or any kind of disorder or your life in general that you wish that they had that would have made your life easier?
Oh, goodness. Is that ever a loaded question? Well, okay, so I'll answer in both a professional and a personal way. And as far as perfectly hidden depression is concerned, I have to shake my head. I don't, even though now I know that perfectionism has been written about for actual, you know, many years, that it's a problem. I don't ever remember anyone talking about in graduate school perfectionism, ever.
Huh.
In fact, I asked one of the major researchers in Canada who are doing their wonderful work on perfectionism if he thought it should be added to the symptoms of classic depression. He said no. Perfectionism is a character trait that has wonderful benefits in moderation, but taken over the top, like a lot of things, it can cause huge chaos and problems. So do I, as a clinician, do I wish I had known that? Because I probably missed it. I probably diagnosed a lot of these people with anxiety, so and they slipped through my own cracks. So I wish I had known that. And I'm doing my best to rectify that at this point. What do I wish personally, that I wish I had been taught that really you can take your time, that it takes a lot of us a long time to mature and grow up. And I know that I tried to grow up really too fast. And I took on responsibilities that I was far too immature to do. And yet I felt these cultural standards. I grew up in the South in the 60s and 70s. And I thought if I weren't married by 23 or 24, I was going to be an old maid. And I married too quickly. I tried to fit myself into a mold of what a woman was supposed to be, and I did not allow myself to mature enough to recognize that that mold didn't fit me at all, and I could give myself permission to do that, but I didn't do that for many, many years, and it caused me a lot of shame. And finally, in my 30s, really, my early 30s, I began to look at those really false expectations and question them and realize I could become my own person, my own woman, and not try to fit the expectations of what I'd grown up in my culture.
And doctor, you have a questionnaire that people can take online to determine if they suffer from perfectly hidden depression. How can they take that? Where can they find that?
They can find it on my website at drmargaretrutherford.com. It's literally, I think the name of the post is How to Know If You Experience Perfectly Hidden Depression, a questionnaire. It's also on my podcast, which is the Self-Work Podcast with Dr. Margaret Rutherford. I believe I give it on either. The funny thing, I don't know if y'all knew this, Jan and Laura, but when I took my podcasting course, I was told by the professor, the teacher that taught it, he said, most podcasts only have 8 episodes. That's the mean. And so I thought, oh, my gosh, if it's 8 episodes, I better talk about perfectly hidden depression in the first few. So I was such a novice at podcasting, and so, but episodes 3 and 4 are about perfectly in depression. I'm now on episode 164, and sure enough, I've done a lot more than 8. I do have a lot of things about perfectly hidden depression within that podcast, interspersed within that podcast. And, of course, you can find it also. The questionnaire is in the book, and you've very kindly invited me to talk about it. And it is you can find the book on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, at your local bookstore if you want to sort of fight Amazon's reach. And if they don't have it on their shelves, they can certainly order it for you. Or you can also actually contact my publisher, New Harbinger, and they will send you the book. And actually, I think you get a discount if you order from New Harbinger.
Super, super. Well, thank you so much, Doctor. This has been a real informative and an enjoyable conversation with you. We really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank y'all. And I'm delighted to be here. I'm passionate about this topic. I know that if we get this word out, that people begin looking for this in their friends, in their spouses, in their children, and we can make a huge difference. You know, I'll point out one more thing. The doctor that's on Good Morning America, Dr. Jen Ashton, I believe is her last name, her ex-husband, and they had not been divorced for too long, actually died by suicide. And she, on Good Morning America, looked at the camera and said, of course, she's a physician, and she said, he had none of the symptoms of classic depression. None. And I've tried to reach her actually, but from all that I hear, he had some version of perfectly hidden depression. And so if we know, if we widen our lens and widen our focus, then we can begin to catch these people who are going to fall through the cracks and who we love. And if it's not you, and it could be, you could be saving yourself, but we can understand that depression can wear many, many, many faces.
Yeah, and I certainly hope we've helped get the word out about that and made people think about it.
I hope so. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Our thanks to Dr. Margaret Rutherford, whose book, again, is called Perfectly Hidden Depression, How to Break Free from the Perfectionism That Masks Your Depression. And her website is drmargaretrutherford.com.
I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with Audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first 3 audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.